So our next speaker is Lanya Ross. She's a principal environmental scientist with the Metropolitan Council. She has a bachelor's degree in geology from McAllister and a master's in geology from Northern Arizona University. She spent the last decade working on water supply planning issues in the Twin Cities metropolitan area, and she has spent much of the past year working closely with the state agency partners to coordinate clean water fund-supported efforts to protect and manage groundwater and drinking water. She will speak to us today on what the Clean Water Fund, thank God for that, is doing for Minnesota groundwater.
Thank you all, and I'm just going to put out a very public thank you to everybody who was able to adapt to the fact that I got here a little bit late, and particularly Jim Seal, who apparently volunteered to give this presentation. If I didn't show up, I had a toddler-related scheduling issue. But I think that actually makes the perfect example of one of the really big benefits to the Clean Water Fund, and that is our partnerships and our willingness to cooperate with each other is even better than it used to be. And the fact that we're sharing all the information a lot more than we were means that if I couldn't be here, somebody else could step in and you would all still benefit from all the great information we have about the Clean Water Fund. So thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. I don't know where you are, but I'll ask you to raise your hand later. So thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm here representing the groundwater drinking water interagency coordination team. And so I'm representing everybody, and that puts me in the position of being able to point fingers, which I will do if I get questions I don't want to answer. With this presentation, I really just hope to leave you all, if you're not really familiar with the Clean Water Fund, I hope to leave you with a better sense of where Clean Water Fund money is going, specifically in regards to groundwater and drinking water, and all the work that I think you're all doing, whether you know it or not. We're all part of the Clean Water Fund and that move forward to improve our water resources here in Minnesota. This is not intended to be a presentation about the state agencies or even about the Met Council, although we rock. But I really wanted it to be just about the clean water work, which is done by thousands of Minnesotans, from the state policymakers all the way down to the local landowners. So we're all participating in this. And I will warn you ahead of time, I wish I had better pictures or better maps, but I don't. So I'm relying on all of you to just look around you at the people around you. And this is cheesy, but you're the illustration of the work we're doing. So you make a much better illustration than anything I could put up here. Really to kick off, I know that some of you are not familiar with the Clean Water Fund, and so I just wanted to go through a refresher about it. So where did it come from? Way back on November 4th, 2008, Minnesota voters were asked, and I quote, "Shall the Minnesota Constitution be amended to dedicate funding to protect our drinking water sources, protect, enhance, and restore our wetlands, our prairies, forests, fish, game, wildlife habitat, preserve our arts and cultural heritage, to support our parks and trails, and to protect, enhance, and restore our lakes, rivers, streams, and groundwater by increasing the sales tax by 0.3% until 2034. And they said yes. Most of them said yes, which is amazing. And so I think, like a lot of you, this decision is likely to shape in one way or another the rest of my career. The amendment dollars, as I alluded to in the constitutional language, are dedicated to four funds. There's the Outdoor Heritage Fund, the Parks and Trails Fund, the Cultural Heritage Fund, and the Clean Water Fund. So that's sort of the setup. Clean Water Fund was created to protect, enhance, and restore lakes, rivers, streams, and groundwater, and to protect drinking water sources. And it's really there to aid targeting efforts, again, to protect and restore all of Minnesota's water resources. And it supports the work, because it's so broad, it supports the work of many, many different water interests. A Clean Water Council, I don't know, some of you I know are familiar with Clean Water Council, others may not be. A Clean Water Council was established back in 2006, and that was through the Clean Water Legacy Act, which I know is confusing to some people. There's the Clean Water Legacy Act, and then there's the Clean Water Land and Legacy Amendment, two separate things. Just have that in the back of your mind. The Clean Water Council was established for the Clean Water Legacy Act, and they make recommendations to the governor and the legislature for the spending of those Clean Water Legacy Act funds. And when the Clean Water Fund was established, the Clean Water Council was assigned to make recommendations for those appropriations as well. They have a lot of knowledge about water issues in Minnesota. That council includes 28 members, and they represent state agencies, tribal governments, local metro and non-metro governments, because sometimes metro and non-metro concerns are very different. Soil and water and watershed conservation districts, hunting organizations, environmental protection organizations, farm organizations, and business organizations. And so the Clean Water Council does rely on feedback from all of these different members' constituents and on the input from several interagency coordination teams. And that includes the groundwater drinking water team, of which I've been a member in the past year. Several, I know, of my colleagues on that team are here in the audience, and I would like to take this opportunity to make you all raise your hand or stand up so that people here stand up, says Kelton. Did they all ditch out? Ah, Dan. Very good. And Jim was here. Jim Seal from DNR was here. Oh, Eric Mooring is here. So not everybody could make it, but these are some of the people that I've been working with. And I know that I wouldn't be at all surprised if there's other people in the audience who are sitting on one of these other interagency coordination teams. And I'd also invite you to just raise your hand and let people know if you are participating on one of these other teams. There's a lot of information that gets shared and a lot of conversations back and forth in these teams. And so I think it's just good to know that that's happening. And I think some people are shy. So pick on them later if you bump into them. All these subteams were established to, this sounds very noble, but it's actually true, to promote cooperation and coordination at the state level, which then, of course, affects all of the local programs that these state agencies also support. And the overarching goal, achieving sustainable management protection of the state's water resources. So, you know, these interagency teams really generate a lot of value. They provide multiple perspectives on water issues, and they promote a coordinated approach, as I said, to the state agencies who are shaping a lot of the work that's being done. While many of our agency jurisdictions and our stakeholders differ, obviously our areas of study, and particularly groundwater, overlap a lot. And so this slide is just a nice slide, I think, and it does a good job of illustrating, you know, just four of the state agencies, but how they differ and where they overlap, and many other organizations, including the Met Council, where I work, and we have a role in long-term water supply planning and land use planning, have important roles to play as well. And so I think as you look at this diagram, in terms of the work that you're all doing, you're going to find, you know, a lot of other overlap that isn't showing up here in your day-to-day jobs. And so the groundwater drinking water team has been working together, you know, really hard to identify what are the overlapping efforts, are there gaps in our knowledge, and trying to develop some groundwater drinking water protection initiatives that reflect the overlap and those gaps. And we include those in Clean Water Fund proposals, these recommendations. And so this is just, you know, some of who we are to prove it. But the initiatives that have been developed in our subteam are intended to provide really five important outcomes at this point. And these do change as new issues arise and as we make progress on others. But right now, we're really focused on efforts that result in increased nitrate and agricultural chemical investigations, expanded emerging contaminant research, accelerated wellhead protection, a very important one, expanded water supply evaluation and protection. And that includes very long-range planning, trying to put out our planning horizon, and expanding the shallow aquifer ambient monitoring network. So generally, we've had a couple rounds of funding now, and generally between 5 and 10% of clean water funds support these drinking water protection initiatives. It's required that at least 5% of the clean water fund be directed toward drinking water initiatives. And in fiscal year 10 and 11, the drinking water protection appropriation comprised 9%, well above that 5% minimum, and in this last round, we're at about 10%. The rest of the Clean Water Fund generally supports what we might consider more surface-based projects in the categories of water quality monitoring and assessment, and this, of course, is directed toward a lot of the work related to TMDL work. Much of the money goes towards water quality study plan development. Those are the protection plans. Again, a lot of them related to TMDL work, but not all, and the bulk of it being on-the-ground protection and restoration activities. So these are, you know, installing BMPs, you know, doing the on-the-ground work to get these activities going. But I do think it's really important to note, I think this conference does a great job of highlighting this, that you know, while we sort of generally consider the bulk of this money going towards surface water type work, you know, the surface and groundwater systems are very closely linked, and we drink it all. So work to protect one part of the hydrologic system, of course, has impacts on the rest of it. As of today, I checked the website, the Minnesota Legislature's website reports 690 separate projects funded by the Clean Water Fund to protect, enhance, and restore Minnesota's waters. And this is the state agency projects that are listed on that website. And it's pretty small to read, and I kind of did that on purpose. I wanted to put it all on one slide to emphasize the point that it's a lot, because these aren't just little tiny small projects. Some of these are more programs that are supporting many, many other activities by many others. And if you do notice an error, please let me know. I did pull this off the website manually, so I may have missed something. But these are just the state agencies receiving money. And you'll also notice that some agencies are not listed. The Public Facilities Authority is not listed, for example. They do get Clean Water Fund money, but they direct it towards others. For example, the Metropolitan Council has gotten Clean Water Fund money through PFA to construct treatment plant improvements at our Blue Light plant, for example. So there's a lot of other work going on that isn't necessarily clearly represented in all of the reporting. So those agency projects and the other 690 projects are being done across Minnesota, and these maps illustrate the Clean Water Fund money spent in 2010 and 11 by watersheds across Minnesota for monitoring and assessment, which is on the bottom left, and then for drinking water protection on the upper right. And I do want to point out that these maps don't include money spent on projects that benefit the whole state equally. So this is just the distribution of projects being conducted in more focused areas, like resource protection plans for a specific area or monitoring in a specific resource. So you can see that this is affecting the entire state of Minnesota and reflects the fact that Minnesotans obviously care very, very deeply for our natural resources and our cultural heritage. How else are you going to explain the fact that we voted successfully to raise our own taxes? But with that vote came very high expectations for results. Is our water quality improving? Is it declining? Is it staying the same? And more importantly, do investments from the Clean Water Fund actually make a difference? I alluded to this website earlier. All Clean Water Fund supported projects are reported on the Minnesota Legislature's website. This is Minnesota's legacy. Watch the progress. And I wanted to put the website up there for you. If you haven't seen it, I encourage you to go and look at it. The site includes a summary of the Clean Water Land and Legacy Amendment funding opportunities, which may be useful to you. It includes individual project summaries. These are very high-level summaries, but they do give you a sense of what's going on and provide information, contacts to find out more. And they also include a variety of different progress reports from different agencies and multi-agency reports. One of them is one that I have spent a lot of time being involved with the past couple of years. The Clean Water Fund outcomes so far are reported in a very new report, and it's the very first to track progress on Clean Water Fund investments. So six state agencies, the University of Minnesota and the Met Council, have been working on this, and we've established a tracking framework. And we've released the first collaborative report on Clean Water Fund investments earlier this year, so this is very new. The tracking framework that we developed includes a set of 36 performance measures that were developed to try and convey the most meaningful information about Clean Water Fund activities to a variety of key audiences across Minnesota. This is really high-level reporting to try and share what we're doing with the general public, with policymakers, with non-technical audiences for the most part. The goal of the project is to try and clarify the connections between Clean Water Funds invested, the actions that are being taken with those funds, and then the clean water outcomes that we're achieving. So I was, as I said, part of the sub-team working on this report, and I can say very, very enthusiastic that we are pleased to get this report out to you. Information in this report covers spending and monitoring the fiscal years 2010 and 2011, and it was the first of the reports on tracking the Clean Water Fund investments. This is the baseline report. We will continue to do these reports into the future, and as we start to see, are we making progress or not, we can compare against this first report. This report includes 18 measures, and they're divided into, as I said, sort of investments, surface water quality actions and outcomes, and then drinking water actions and outcomes. And just that, you know, there's 18 measures reported here. We have developed 36 that we would like to track, and those other measures we will be releasing, but at the same time, we knew we wanted to report on certain things, but we didn't have all of the information we needed in order to be able to do that for this round, but we do intend to develop those in the future. And we also are going to be working to develop some stressor measures and some social measures, which are still under development. That's to try and provide a little bit more context about the progress we're making. I mean, we may be holding steady on water quality in a certain area, but if we know that the land use is changing very, very rapidly in that area, you know, holding steady might be a good achievement. But we want to have more of that kind of information. So, what the report says. The state is currently on track with its investments. And we're saying that because of the 18 measures. While the status and trends vary, we do see 6 measures that show improving trends. With the framework that we've developed, with the new programs that we've developed, you know, we're on track, pointed towards our goals. 7 measures are still too early to really assess whether we're doing well or what the trend is. We do have 1 measure that has a trend that is going in the wrong direction. But the report doesn't include, we don't include trend information about the investment money. Just keep that in mind as we're going through this. I do want to highlight that in this first performance report, we really reported more progress on sort of short-term actions taken than on the long-term outcomes achieved. We haven't been doing this for the long term, so as we report in the future, I think that the weight of the measures will change a little bit. And it is important to know, too, that this report, the environmental outcomes that were included in this report are not reflecting just the impacts of Clean Water Fund. I mean, improvements that we see in water quality are clearly a result of a lot of the activities that have been going on in the past as well. And so that's something to keep in mind. We're hoping that as we track these things going forward into the future, we will see things improve at a greater rate following Clean Water Fund investments. That's something we're looking for. And of course, it's impossible to measure and report on all the clean water activities in one report. Again, this is high-level measures that sort of fold up the results of all of the smaller individual projects. The drinking water measures in the report include source water protection plans, nitrate monitoring, reduction activities, contaminants of emerging concern, chemicals in Minnesota's groundwater, source water quality changes, and the nitrate concentrations in new wells. We do have other measures related to groundwater and drinking water that we look forward to reporting in the future, but this is the measures that we had the best available information for this report. I wanted to again reiterate some of the measures, such as the source water protection planning and the contaminants of emerging concern, are indicators of the actions that we're taking to protect drinking water and groundwater. And other measures, including the chemicals in groundwater and nitrate concentrations in new wells, are indicators of the outcomes that we're documenting. So viewing all of these measures together, again, tracking how the investments result in actions taken, result in outcomes. So thus ends this sort of portion of this presentation. I wanted to take the next couple of slides to just go into some of the details on 4 of these measures and illustrate the status and trends for the highlighted measures, and then also just highlight a few of the Clean Water Fund projects, these more individual projects that are related to karst and contamination, kind of provide a little bit more of a sales pitch for the other work that's being done by others perhaps in this room. And I do hope that at the end of this I leave you with a sense of, you know, the value of the Clean Water Fund investments and also a variety in the size and the scope of the different Clean Water Fund projects. To kick off, source water protection, which efforts are primarily, of course, guided by the Department of Health, but implemented by a wide variety of stakeholders. So the report, baseline report, concludes actions to protect source waters still need work. It's really too early to assess the impact of clean water funds on source water protection, and we have to acknowledge that a lot of work still needs to be done for source water protection. Only 452 of the 929 community water supplies that use groundwater have source water protection plans, and that's less than 50%. So really a lot of work still needs to be done across Minnesota for source water protection. But the trend in that protection activity is improving, This is just a graph illustrating the number of communities engaged in wellhead protection planning. The blue line are the communities now in the wellhead protection program, and the green line is the number of approved plans. You can see there's a lag because they're still in progress. We do see that we anticipate that Clean Water Fund money will help us to accelerate getting communities engaged into source water protection planning. I just want to take a little side note to say the measure, source water protection planning, number of communities engaged, is sort of an indicator of how much action we're taking. But approved source water protection plans aren't the only source water work supported by Clean Water Fund. And this is just one example of related work in a karst area. It's the Root River watershed, where they're developing a comprehensive strategy and project support work. And while this project, again, is primarily identified as a TMDL project, I think the link between surface water and groundwater, particularly in karst areas like this, make it a valuable project for source water protection as well. Switching gears a little bit, another measure, contaminants of emerging concern. This is an effort that is spearheaded by the Minnesota Department of Health. It's the establishment of health-based guidance values for contaminants of emerging concern. And progress on this measure we consider to be good. We're meeting our targets. We have established 20 new guidance values in fiscal 10 and 11, fiscal years 10 and 11. We're on track for fiscal years 12 and 13, and the Minnesota Department of Health in particular, but I know others are involved in really expanding the outreach and education. And I know we're going to hear more about some of the work that's being done with contaminants emerging concern later. And this is just, you know, a good list illustrating some of those health-based guidance values. The one that really strikes me, because with a toddler, I use this probably more often than I should, is there is now a health-based guidance value for Tylenol, but also a number of others. And so there's been a lot of work done recently on this topic. I mean, and again, you know, in addition to establishing health-based guidance values, there's a lot of work supported by the Clean Water Fund on the topic, including a project through the University of Minnesota to look at an evaluation of the sources, the distribution, and the management of contaminants of emerging concern. Again, this one is taking place in a karst area. This is in the Zumbro watershed where they're focusing a lot of their work. So I think there'll be some interesting work coming out of this project, again, along with many others. Chemicals in Minnesota's groundwater. This would be an example of a measure of an outcome. We're doing all these source water protection activities. We're establishing guidance values. What outcomes do we see? And this one is really tricky. But one of the outcomes we're tracking, which is hopefully improved by all these actions we're taking, is the level of chemicals in Minnesota's groundwater. For this particular measure in our report, the Minnesota Department of Ag is the lead agency. And this measure currently uses a suite of pesticides and nitrate to represent the distribution of chemicals in groundwater. The report concludes that the status of Minnesota's groundwater, at least relative to chemical contamination, surprise, surprise, needs some improvement. You know, we really, this is a need that I think we're all clear that we, you know, do need more time and information to assess trends, particularly in areas where there's limited data, and for some other types of chemicals. While we do see over time so far decreasing concentrations of five of the very common pesticides, you know, they're still very commonly detected at low levels in vulnerable groundwater in particular. When it comes to nitrate, there's a lot of variability across the state. We recognize that. And we also recognize that nitrate levels do continue to exceed the drinking water standards and are even increasing in some vulnerable aquifers. Really quickly, again, just to prove that we're tracking this, but, you know, looking at, you know, this report, we do want to consider the fact that we want to include some historical information to kind of see what has the trend been historically and does that change with Clean Water Fund's investment. So we'll be continuing to track this over time. Just looking at nitrate in more detail, because I think that's a really important topic, we also have a measure that looks at tracking the nitrate concentrations in new wells. And the report concludes that, again, we still need work in this area. At this point, at the beginning of the Clean Water Funding, it's unclear if we're going to meet our long-term water resource needs and the citizen expectations for improving nitrates in groundwater. And actually, the trend in nitrate concentrations in new wells, the trend, we're not headed towards our goal. We're headed away from it. And that's because even though in new wells nitrate levels are generally very low, we do see a slight increase. We think we see what could be a slight increase in the number of new wells being installed with nitrates greater than 10 milligrams per liter. And notice that on the vertical axis, we have the percent of new wells. And so it's still less than 1% of all new wells. But the fact that it may be increasing is cause for concern. And so we're going to be paying more attention going forward. Just another kind of specific project that illustrates that, a Clean Water Fund project to help us better understand the sources of nitrate in our aquifers is ongoing in southeastern Minnesota, and there's a project right now to characterize nitrogen fertilizer use on manure fields in the southeast karst region. And so, again, trying to get better information about where that nitrate is coming from, who is using it, who are the stakeholders we can work with to try and establish some better management practices. And I hope that this presentation gives you a sense of the magnitude of the work and also the interorganizational cooperation that's been generated by the Clean Water Fund. I wanted to end with this point, that the value of the Clean Water Fund is much, much greater than just the value of the fund itself. In 2010, a little over $21 million in Clean Water Fund grant and loan awards were able to leverage more than $34 million in additional funding from other sources, and that pattern held true for the following year, too. It's because of the cooperative efforts between all of us, within the state agencies, with the state agencies and their partners, that the Clean Water Fund is able to currently leverage $1.45 for every dollar the state invested. And so I think that this is a really important point. I mean, we all coordinated before the Clean Water Fund was established, but I don't think we did it as comprehensively, and I think that documenting the value of that coordination means that we would continue to do this now. I mean, even if, heaven forbid, the Clean Water Fund went away, or in 2035, I think we're establishing a really good case for the monetary and also the water resource value of this type of planning. So thank you very much. Oh, right.
Is there a question?
Questions? That is a, I don't remember his name, I apologize, but he's a Minnesota Department of Health grandchild.
Vanya, have you looked at the geographic distribution and the depth of those wells with the increasing nitrates?
There has been a lot of work done to look at that distribution. I know that the Department of Ag has done considerable work with that, and they continue to do that. There's the Central Sands Nitrate Survey is one project that's an example. Dan, are you here? Do you want to chime in?
The new wells.
The new wells. That would be Bruce.
Oh.
You're on the spot, Bruce.
Well, I'm not going to make it up. I could pass it over to my colleague over here, Ron Thompson, Mr. Wilco. But, you know, I don't have a good answer to that. You know, the number of wells that have been constructed annually has dramatically decreased during the economic slowdown. So I don't know if some of these are on properties where, you know, well construction in the past, there were a lot of replacement wells where there were already high levels of nitrate or not. Ron, do you have an idea? Okay, Ron doesn't have an idea.
And,
so.
Well, and I would like to point out, though, that the report that we did does provide this very high-level summary, but we also did make an effort to include the metadata that we used to develop all these metrics, and so that's available, too, on the Legacy website, so you can get into those details there as well.
Yeah, and bear in mind, that's a very small percentage of the new wells that are going in that have nitrates that
exactly.
You know, that have those levels in them.
And I think the poster by Greg Brick is touching on that as well. Any other questions? Jim.
Yeah, I have a question. I think this is a very good presentation. I think this effort that you're doing is extremely important and is going to be looked at by others around the country, because this is really, in Minnesota, we have a unique situation here where funds started to flow, and then now this evaluation process of the effectiveness is coming forward. But have you thought a little bit about being intentional about trying to describe the lag time from implementation of a new program to some kind of measure of effectiveness? Because I think that's something that maybe people don't understand, don't think about, but it's something that is built into this lag time is built into this process and is something that I think people will really want to understand.
Thank you for bringing that up, and that is a very important point. And yes, I should have brought that up front and center earlier, and that is that there is going to be, you know, like you say, a lag time when we do an activity, how soon before we start to see the results of that. And I think that's particularly important to acknowledge when we're talking about trying to restore groundwater quality or any of the groundwater systems that not in all cases, things move more quickly, but that there is going to be this time for our land use changes, our management changes to make its way through the system. And so I think that establishing this tracking framework now and being able to check in periodically is going to be very, very important. And it's going to be very, very interesting, I think, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, we're going to have a really, I think, much better understanding of how our systems work going forward.